Yeah.
Any more questions, Adam? that answers. I can't remember what it was though.
Well, I suppose. Well, I should mention a lot of young people are quite biblically illiterate, and it's a great shame because, well, aside from, you know, many Christians who aren't able to defend their faith, you even have many, you know, atheists who are supposed to be, you know, the voice of reason and intelligence, who, you know, denounce the Bible and say it's fairy tales and fiction and none of it can be proven, yet they know nothing about it. I suppose it's more of a comment than a question, but I suppose I have a few questions sort of for help, really, because my church is quite heavily involved in evangelism. We go out onto the high street, our local high street, every week as much as we can, and just go to people and try to witness to them the good news of Jesus Christ. And obviously we encounter a lot of young people, most of which are quite secular. But one of the biggest, you know, issues we've encountered is a real sort of apathy, where more than atheism is a lot of just apathy now, where people don't care about anything. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many different teachers telling so many different things that it's kind of blurred the lines where they don't even believe in truth anymore.
Yeah.
So
it's all relative.
It's all relative. I mean, how do you confront that exactly? Because it seems quite difficult. You can't make someone want to care almost. It seems like kind of hitting your head against a brick wall. I mean, how would you deal with that?
I think it's a strange balance between postmodern thinking and politically correct thinking.
Mm.
So postmodern thinking is there is no absolute truth, or we can't know it.
Right.
Political correct thinking is what's true for you is true for you, and I can't step on that. So I've had some funny discussions up at uni with people who are all really respectful, but they're respectful because they want you to shut up. So they'll say, "Oh well, you know, that's really I remember one lady saying, you know, I really value what you believe, and blah, 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 blah." And usually the way you say it is that I am either completely right, in which case you have a problem,
mm-hmm.
or I am completely wrong and I've totally wasted my life. And the reaction to that is always the same. That was what they said, well, you haven't wasted your life because, you know, it's been good for you. So, well, no, you know, Paul says, if only for this life we have hope in Christ, we are to be pitied more than all men.
Mm.
He basically said, look, if this isn't right, especially for Paul, because, I mean, I didn't exactly go through what Paul went through, but he was saying, look, if this is wrong, I have wasted my life.
Mm.
Now, in sort of the West, we can get away with having quite a nice life and being a Christian, so it doesn't feel as wasted, quote unquote. But confronting people with that reality of, like, if I am right, then it matters to you. Mm. If I am wrong, I waste it. It cuts through the postmodern things. It says it either is true as it isn't, which they don't want to hear.
Mm.
And it cuts through it's good for me, but not for you. Because if it's only good for me if it's right.
Mm.
Because if it's not right,
mm.
then it's not. Even the writer of the New Testament will say it's not worth it.
Mm.
It's only worth it because it is true. And people really don't know what to do with that, because they're saying, well, I mean, one guy was like, well, why are you saying that? Do you not want to be a Christian? Like, no, I'm just saying that if it isn't right, it's not worth doing. Because if it isn't true, there's no point. Like, it's not a hobby. You know, it's the effect that it's had on life. There's been lots of joys and lots of difficulties which could have been sidestepped if I wasn't doing this.
Right, right.
And I think it's helping people see that the truthfulness of it is the reason that we cling to it.
Mm.
And that is the only, in some senses, that is the primary and key reason. And if it is not true, it is not worth keeping.
Mm.
So, and people really have to process that because it jars with them, because you're not doing the politically correct.
The trouble is,
it's good for me, not for you. The
trouble is there's a lot of Christians who are politically correct. And, yeah. and what you've just said is probably, you're probably, you know, you're not in the norm. Most of them would be postmodern Christians. You know?
Yeah.
So where, you know, it's all about relativism still, you know. So there needs to be more young voices like Louis and yourself who are standing up for the absolute truth.
There was a lady up at my church. She was asked quite a few years ago now. She was asked about, she was doing all the Cambridge thing, and they were asking her about postmodern thought and Christianity said, you know, everyone pretty much is a postmodern, or whether they've realised it or not, when they say things like, you know, that's good for you. You know, that is a postmodern concept, that it's good for you but not for me.
Yeah.
Or we can't know for sure, or I feel that this is right for me. That is a postmodern idea. And so 99% of everyone...
It's all tied up with...
Relativism
with
again.
But the interesting thing, postmodernism is basically self-centeredness because it's basically, what I want is right. It's a very intelligent form of self-interest.
It's also promoted by the government in multiculturalism, isn't it? It's about being okay with other cultures, saying you know, they have their truth, we have yours. So let's all get on with each other. Start trying to convert them to your way of thinking. You know,
the word tolerance, actually.
Tolerance is the big word.
Is really misunderstood.
Some things are intolerable. Well, it shouldn't be tolerated.
Yeah. But tolerance...
We can't mention them, though, can we? mention them.
I think...
Through privilege and greatness.
But I think other faith you can tolerate. I had a really good... So I live with 4 gay people in my corridor of housing.
Corridor of power.
Yeah, my corridor of...
Is it all pink? Pink corridor?
No, it isn't, actually. No. So one of the girls... one of the lesbian girls, we've actually gone quite well with, we're having a chat. And it's kind of like joking now. So, are you you gay hating again? Because this is one of the big things I asked about, is the homosexuality issue. Because there's a lot of it in Cambridge. I was quite surprised. I've never met so many gay people and so many Irish people.
Cambridge homosexuality.
In my life. But I haven't met any gay Irish people.
Oh, Jess and McLean.
So with someone this girl, and I said, look, you can disagree. You can believe someone is doing something wrong. I said, look, you believe that what I believe and how I behave is wrong. You believe how Jews believe what they believe and how they behave wrong, and Muslims. But you would be offended if I said that you were Islamophobe or that you were, anti-Semitic. Yeah, because it is very possible to totally disagree and even dislike what someone believes and does and still not hate them. Do you know what I mean? And it's helping people see that when they accuse you of homophobia, they themselves are just as guilty with every other religion in the world. Mm. They disagree with it. They don't like it. And if you asked, part of them would want to, in some sense, quote unquote, remove or deal with it or change it. Mm. So they don't like it or respect it or value it, but they can still like people that are involved with that.
Yeah.
And it's helping people see that disagreement is not hatred. Because we all do it.
Point.
But yeah, bless her. She makes me laugh. She's actually probably. Someone said to me that one of the people you get on most with in your course was going to be a hardcore lesbian feminist. I would have laughed, but she is. She's hilarious. We have all kinds of bizarre discussions. She's a good egg. We'll see what happens there.
But the core of it is a human being.
Yeah, exactly. That's what people are.
They need to know that, you know, we don't hate them, and that their sexuality is not all that they are. It's just an aspect.
Mm.
But they make, you know, quite often they make it who they are.
Mm.
Mm. It's interesting how people hold Christianity and the Bible to this, you know, to this standard that they don't place on any other religion, even sort of fundamentalist religions like Islam, and the thing that why I think a lot of this is, and I'm you know, I'm sure you probably would agree with this, Lou, a lot of it is spiritual, is because, you know, when you actually just look at secular society and even in the rise of Islam, for instance, so many people who are politically correct, they will, you know, want to defend this ideology which is utterly opposed to secular values.
And yet,
you know, they want to put Christianity, at the standard, you know, where no matter what you do, it's always wrong because you're this tyrannical.
Well, it's exactly
belief
the same
system.
View towards Israel, you know,
right,
and their imperfections, which, you know, pale into insignificance in comparison to what's going on in the rest of the Middle East.
Mm, mm.
But somehow the UN and everybody that has that bad attitude towards them, it's the new form of anti-Semitism. It's like it's finally rested where it was aimed at, Israel.
Right.
And that's what the devil's been doing all the time over the centuries. Mm-hmm. But they're now back where they're supposed to be, and the anti-Semitism has shifted to Israel because people feel a bit more self-righteous about all those Israelis and what they do to those, you know, all the lies that go out there.
About the spirit, I know I mentioned this before, but the spiritual aspect of it,
yeah,
there's the ultimate issue. If the Jewish people and if the land of Israel is destroyed,
yeah,
then God's promises can't be fulfilled.
That's another reason why the focus has been.
That's the strategy all through. Yeah, the Jews have to be around to.
If we can get rid of
part of part of the second coming. The Jews have to be there.
Exactly.
Particularly since the Holocaust, those people with those anti-Semitic feelings have had to suppress those feelings.
Still there.
Because it's still, but now Israel is a country, they can rebrand that as anti-Israel. But it's still basically anti-Semitism. And it's the ultimate focal point of anti-Semitism.
I just had a thought that, you know, that Satan is trying to destroy Israel externally from the outside.
Yeah.
But actually, I think he's trying to destroy the church from inside.
Well, I think he's trying to do that a little bit with Israel as well.
Yeah.
With the extremist Orthodox who are anti-Zionist.
Yeah. So I was trying to think of what Adam was saying about why would people, when they think about, you know, Christianity, Christians, the church, you know, what picture do they have? What's history given them? You know, what does it represent to the ordinary man in the street? You know, that image.
It's anti the spirit of the age. Christians are seen as being inflexible, not tolerant. And that's anti what we're taught to be in this world.
The basic simple truth of it is that it conflicts with our life. I remember I've had a few chats with some guys in my course talking about relationships and that sort of thing. I was talking about faith and how, you know, ideally, you know, biblically you find a Christian woman and all that sort of thing. And some of the conversations were fascinating. And that, you know, I've had at least two or three girls and women that have said, you know, this is why not having a belief makes life so much easier, though. Because they'd listen to, you know, the way it's set up, and they're like, you know, and they would say, you know, doing it the way that we do it is so much easier. I don't have to think about all this stuff. I find someone I like, blah, blah, blah. We're in a relationship now for a few years, it's nice, blah, blah, blah. And so there is also a sense in which...
Morality doesn't come into it.
There's a sense in which... Well, it's not that they have no morality, but they can set up their own morality. Yeah, they can set up the morality that sort of works for them. It's the postmodern thing, you know, I can do what I want and I can learn from my mistakes and sort of... My morality is flexible and growing rather than fixed and adhered to. And I remember a friend of mine said to me during a tech, like one of these sort of things where you go out and you see people, you answer their questions. And one of the guys said, you know, is there anything that would stop you from being a Christian? Because his idea was, it can't be a true faith and belief if it's not open to change, which I challenge. But the basic point I made is, I think I've done enough reading to be pretty sure it's true. I said, but there is still the reality that the one thing that could potentially, in some sense, turn you is the same thing that blinds everyone, which is the desire for sin. You know, that is the thing that will pull you away far more than arguments and discussion and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
There'll always be an underlying... and again, there was a girl from my church who I mentioned earlier. She did a blog and she talks about how she's tried to leave. She said, I've joined Skeptics Anonymous. I've read all the atheist blogs, but in vain. And so the problem with Christianity is it's something that happens to you. And she's totally right. She said... And once that happens, you know, you are changed, and that is it. And so there is that battle of you are holding on to someone that sometimes you don't want to hold on to. And I was trying to explain this to this guy. I said, the only thing that really causes Christians to really struggle is usually it's not the big head stuff. It's the day-to-day opportunities and struggles that really take it out of you. It's been... And that's why that flexibility, that ability to go, actually, I'll have my own morality that's not horrific, but, you know, it's certainly not Christian either. I think that's the biggest draw. The arguments are helpful, but ultimately, people want to do what they want to do.
Yeah. That's really helpful. And I think it's a great... One of the travesties of the sort of late 20th century, the early 21st century, is this idea you're talking about postmodernism, how that's kind of pervaded the church. And you've got people like, I don't want to make a habit of naming names, but okay. Well, you've got people like, you know, like Rob Bell Steve Chalk and stuff, who basically base their whole argument and line of thinking on, well, this has been my experience, or right. This is what the culture says, and the church needs to adapt to that, and otherwise we're going to be left behind, you know. And it's like it's such a deceptive tactic, and probably is a tool of Satan, because it says, because he plays on Christian spheres, because he says, well, if you don't do this, you're going to become irrelevant. The irony of that is that, you know, if you say, well, just be like the world, and then you won't be irrelevant. Just see how irrelevant you become when you just assimilate to the world.
You're not meant to be part of the world.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You're much more have much more of an effect when you say the truth.
Eternal, you know? And it's not subject to the spirit of the age.
Yeah.
And this is the problem that a lot of people have. Yeah. They think that, you know, you've got to keep up with the modern.
I think the way we're relevant is, I think there's two themes to it. So there's the whole we need to be relevant to the world, which is right. We don't become relevant by being it. We're relevant by being different. But when people have said, oh, why is this relevant? I say, well, I said, the reason why this is relevant, number one, because God still exists, whether you believe it or not. Number two, because God is still holy and will judge the world, whether you like it or not. Mm. Number three, you are going to fail that test when it comes. So it's still relevant because you are going to live forever somewhere, and God is going to decide that. And Jesus is the only way to get out of a bad place. Mm. That is why it's relevant, full stop. Eternally, you're going to live somewhere, so it is relevant to you. Mm. But there is a sense in which we need to make sure we're answering the right question. So I think our relevance is less to do with our being worldly, but there is a true sense in which the way that we can be relevant is by listening to the questions. I remember someone saying, the problem is we're still answering questions that were batted around in the 60s. Yeah. We're not listening to the questions and challenges that are coming out now. That's where people like Timothy Keller and guys like that have been quite useful, because they have a grip on postmodern thinking and all of these issues, and they answer those challenges and those questions. They don't seek to become like it, but there is a sense in which our relevance needs to be tapping into the right question.
So we need to know.
We need to understand what their problem is. Do you know what I mean? We don't have to do what they do. Mm. We have to understand what their questions are, and answer them properly.
So this is a new challenge then. This is not a traditional
relevance. So relevance is about understanding the challenges.
Being in it but not of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a different variation of that.
How do we learn this? Where do we go to learn this?
Listen to people. So when they say blah, 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 you just listen to the questions that they listen to the questions they actually bring you. So and really
perhaps,
get.
Perhaps we should have one or two of them here.
Yeah.
Well, why not? Make it a full debate.
Have you ever seen, I'd recommend if anyone gets a chance, go and watch Doug Wilson and Christopher Hitchens' Collision. It's a debate they have. Really enjoyed that. But one of the things Doug Hitchens has said, when he sort of does lectures on philosophy and all these sort of things, he said, you've got to state the question back to them and check that you are hearing the question exactly how they get, because so many times we hear a question and we just hear a key term. And I do it all the time. I'll say, well, homosexuality. And I've got like a stock answer. I've got like six little stories I can give them. I've got a few pithy catchphrases and I've got a personal experience. And I just hear, I went to the official question, blah, here's all the things over the years that I have stocked up on this issue that I'm just going to give you all of it. Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's like a file.
Very Greek, isn't it?
These analogies, bang, here we go. And we actually have to really listen to the questions and say, so are you saying that the reason why blah, 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 blah is because of this and this and this? And we'll say yes. And sometimes you have to think on your feet. You realise, I haven't really seen it like that before.
It stops you being on the defence as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you're engaging with people rather than just thinking, I've got to answer the question and answer it completely, you know, as well.
Yeah. And answering questions with questions is important.
We found that a little bit in, you know, when you're engaging with other Christians, though. You know, remember when we were down at Cornwall and people come up to the stand? You can't just start talking to somebody about what you're doing. No. You have to engage with them first.
But we've got to sell books.
That's true. but to do that. You need to know what the person's need was first and which book would suit their need. So, but it is true, because you have to engage with who you are speaking to, you know, where they're at, who they are, mm-hmm. before you can launch into, you know, an hour or something, or half an hour. It's so true.
Didn't I get my soapbox?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just not relevant to them, is it? You've got to be relevant to the person, whether they're Christian, non-Christian, you know, every conversation, really. But no, I'd find it quite scary, really. Mm-hmm. Because if you live in a Christian bubble and you don't engage on that level, like you're at uni, don't engage on that level, and I think I'd find that world really scary. So well done.
I mean, I engage with people that I think don't think, and I can't engage with them because they don't think. There's nowhere to go with them, and to me that's the scary thing.
Quite often they go,
they just haven't got a clue.
I think we've had that with because part of most of our ministry is dealing with the church, and the one issue that's been keeps coming back over the years is the Israel thing. Mm. We've discovered that it's only the minority that are into replacement theology or understand us. It's like 95% just are not interested, because they don't want to think.
Or they even accept the basis of it through very lack of thought.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what that is? Oh, is that particular view?
Because they don't want to get into debate or confusion or, you know, anything that might disrupt their comfortable lives.
Yeah.
But
sometimes they don't feel it's relevant to their daily walk.
That is that too. And there's all these.
They don't often engage with what's going on in the world. They engage with their closed Christian life, which is okay, but.
Yeah.
You need to sort of understand what's happening biblically in the world today.
Yeah.
I've often suspected that a lot of the reason people reject the idea of modern Israel being a fulfillment of prophecy is because it's really, I suppose, would you call it a kind of a harbinger of the end times? You know, the fact that they're back in the land, and that means that people can't just live their comfortable middle class, upper middle class lifestyles anymore, that they have to be looking... Because, you know, the Lord could come back at any moment. It could happen, it could happen any moment. And that's, you know, we know the horrors that are going to come upon the earth once that happens, you know. So
they're in denial about the end times.
Well, yeah, I think that they have
according to what you believe, there's another 1,000 years of peace after
right,
that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I think for a lot of people, there's, I think the 70s and 80s, there was a big push for end times things and Israel things. And obviously, there's a lot of rubbish out there based on the Israeli as well. And it's an easy caricature as well. And I think there's a lot of Christians like, I really don't want to be clubbed in with this end of the world lot and this Israel thing, which I don't really understand anyway. I think it has got a caricature of itself that Christians can sort of just laugh off.
All the truths get mixed up into something.
The basic caricature is the man that used to walk up and down Oxford Street with his little end is nigh.
Don't eat protein.
That's the protein man.
Don't eat protein. Yeah. What was that about?
Yeah, well, about diet.
It causes all sorts of lusts.
He's a weird looking bloke as well.
He was, yeah.
Bless him.
Does pasta have a lot of protein in it?
No, it's mainly carbohydrates. So you're right.
We're safe.
I think we've gone on for quite a long time.
Yes.
I hope this all saves. The file isn't just too big to save.
I can hear cake.
Cake.
Cake. I can hear the cake.
I always remember Louis's first word. What was Louis's first
cake
word?
His first cake. Word was
I'm,
cake.
I'm determined to make it my last word, but I want to end on something meaningful. So I've got to come up with something that ends on cake, but is like really deep and like something my children will remember.
The world is in a terrible state. Let them eat cake.
Hopefully, I've got a good 2 years to think of something.
Hebrew word that sounds like cake.
Yeah. What is it? Jackie Mason says it's Jewish drugs, isn't it?
It's a bit like these one of the footnotes I saw in the Bible was sounds like the word.
This is to find out.
You know, I saw it the other day. It had sounds like the word.
It's all finished. Just fade out.
Joshua, I think, because that's where I'm reading. But it's a bit like, you know, find the Hebrew word that it sounds like and do the translation.
That was very rambly, wasn't it?